Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, good evening and welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm here with my co-host tonight, Red Beckman and Dr. Kate. And I'm not sure if either one of you are on here live with me to say hello. Well, perhaps not.
Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening, Kate.
I'll be in the background. I'm keeping an eye out for everybody. You've got three of your callers on, so I'll let you know when Red joins us.
Yes, he said he'd be on time, so I expect him here shortly. Who have we got on with us already?
It looks like Stephen, Gus, and looks like Doug.
70-whatever.
Yep. Mhm.
Well, good.
Want me to unmute everybody?
Yes, please.
All right. Very good.
Well, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Do I have a volunteer to open us with a prayer?
I'll be happy to.
Thank you, Stephen.
You ready to roll?
We're ready to roll.
All right. Father in heaven, we thank you again for all the blessings that you've poured out on us. We thank you for this time we have together. We ask you to bless our time together, give us wisdom, clarity of thought, and the ability, Father, to communicate effectively with each other. We need your help. We acknowledge that you are who you are and nobody else is. We ask these things and thank you for them. In the name of King Yeshua. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you very much. That was Stephen Hance of the All States Organic Initiative. We also have Gus Breton with us with the All States Organic Initiative. Gus, would you like to say hello?
Hey, everybody. Don't have a whole lot to say, really, right now.
Well, that's all right. That's okay. We'll get into it. And yeah. Doug Millar, is Jim Cook on with us yet, Doug?
Sure.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
We hear you just fine. You're a little muffled, but that's okay. Doug and Doug Millar and Jim Cook are simulcasting with us tonight on Crusade Radio, and those guys are with United for Justice. Doug, why don't you just give us a little bit of history on United for Justice, because I'm not sure all of our listeners are really familiar with that.
Well, thank you. And, folks, we're doing it. As you heard, a simulcast with Walls in Our Minds. So we do this Thursdays now because of the constitutional issues that they're dealing with and because of the national front of people they bring on board to discuss these issues. And so we hope that you'll listen the rest of the week at crusaderadio.com at this same hour, the first hour only. But I'll be coming back on to listen to the second hour. I know that Jim Cook plans to also. But Unite for Justice, people think about United. No, it's Unite. In other words, we need to join forces. Unite for Justice was co-founded by over 80 of us in over 20 states back in 2010. Well, I went to New Hampshire and helped rescue baby Cheyenne, which I know the guests will remember that case, and it changed my life to hold that little precious baby in my arms when she was only a week old because she'd been stolen from her parents in the hospital. So with that, it's back to you, Terry.
Well, thank you for that insight there, Doug. I'd like to open up tonight with Jim Cook. Jim, if you could speak rather clearly tonight, that'd be good. I think we got a better reception tonight than we did last night, but I think folks were having a little trouble hearing you last night. So just kind of slow yourself down a little bit and speak. But, Jim, you've got a very interesting background, and you've had some interesting experiences. And I heard your passion last night talking to you after our radio broadcast last night. I really was pleased to hear you speak the way that you did. And I asked you then if you would share some of that tonight. And I'd just like to give you the floor a little bit and have the folks understand who you are, what you're about, and give us a little testimony about your experience with common law in your court.
Well, basically, I'm a designer in the engineering field. I've done a lot of work for NASA and U.S. government designing surveillance planes and also UAVs and things of the nature. Right now I'm working on a miniature submarine for the Navy SEALs. So they can deploy, and it's launched from the back of a larger submarine, and I'm working on the electrical system. Basically, when I was at MIT, I got into what some would consider conspiratorial things, and from there it led me to the Patriot Movement, which over time I've spent a lot of time in New England as a speaker at different Patriot forums and things of that nature. But I got into studying common law and the law, and I've had a few bouts with the court because of a divorce I went through. And the emphasis was that they tried to serve me with a, long story short, a restraining order when my wife in Missouri claimed that I was trying to break into her house in Missouri, and I was on the peninsula of Delmarva, which is off the coast of Virginia. And I refused to take it, so the police got physical with me. And from that day on, I've been exercising common law, and I'll tell you how that works. Basically, I found out that we, the people, are not subject to what people call laws nowadays. It's code, and code is only enforced through contracts. So if you're driving your car down the road and a cop pulls you over for speeding, you don't have a driver's license, you've never signed the contract to obey the code or the speeding laws. Now they can say, well, you're driving without a license. You're driving your motor vehicle without a license. Well, the difference between a motor vehicle and a car or an automobile are two separate things. A motor vehicle is used for doing commercial activity on the highways, whereby it's a natural right to exercise your right to travel by automobile, so long as you're not making money using the roads. And basically, according to all the law cases that I studied, the roads belong to us. And anybody who has a truck who wants to transport over that road just can't do it willy-nilly because they cause a lot of damage to the roads. And the people who own it, us, don't have to pay for that damage. So they set this up in the original law that only truck drivers and people who make their money on the highways would do that. And a driver is a person who makes money on the roads. But I had a bout with the police, or actually the sheriff's department in Elmira, New York. And I was parked on the side actually talking to Doug in a conference call. And cops came by and they started asking me information. I was just parked. Well, I found out later that down the street there was a prison. So somebody had drove by and reported me as suspicious. So they sent a couple of sheriff deputies out to me and they asked for my license. So I gave them an expired license. And he says, you understand this license is expired. And I says, I know. And he goes, well, you're not supposed to be driving on the roads your motor vehicle without a license. And I says, well, first of all, I says, I'm not driving. I'm exercising my right to travel by automobile. And basically I told him much. And what ended up happening was he said, well, open your other door. So I unlocked the door, and the other cop opened it, and then he proceeded to the back and started to search my car. And I said to him, I says, you know, you just violated two federal laws, 18 U.S.C. 241, conspiracy against rights, and 18 U.S.C. 242, conspiracy against rights under colorable law. And he immediately quit searching the car as soon as I told him it was a $10,000 fine and 10-year prison sentence. So he stopped and he got on his phone and he started talking to his dispatch. And then he came back after and says, well, can I search your car? And I said, do you have a search warrant? He goes, no. And I said, then the answer to that is no. And he says, well, we're going to tow your car, and we're going to do an inventory of it, as if an inventory isn't searching. So I says, no, you aren't. And he turned around, and they called the tow truck, but he was still on the horn with his dispatcher, and he had already violated my rights. And they brought the truck to tow my car, and then the tow truck driver put it back where it was parked in the first place, and I asked him what was going on. He says, oh, I guess we're not towing your car. So the other police officer handed me a ticket, which is a contract to that I have to review and either accept or not accept. And I took the ticket, and he gave me my keys back and told me to walk down the street, therefore violating 18 U.S.C. 242, conspiracy against rights under colorable law, telling me I couldn't drive on the road because of the law. So as I walked down the street, they both passed me after I got about 20 yards, and then I went in to get arraigned for the court date. And the first court date that it went, I should have sent the ticket back in saying that for consideration, I didn't want to accept and consider that. But instead, I went into court. And when the judge walked into the room, I remained seated, therefore challenging his jurisdiction and notifying him that in that courtroom, I was the highest officer in that court. And reason being was the court case of Chisholm versus Georgia, where the court ruled that when we get the King of England out of the United States back when we kicked them out and won the war, that basically we became the kings and queens of this nation, and no government agency had any authority over us so long as we remained under common law, and we didn't break the only law there is in the United States, which is corpus delicti. Corpus delicti in Latin means body of crime, and basically if there's no injury, loss, or harm, or a victim, then you've broken no laws. So all this code that you sign into when you get a driver's license to obey the stop signs, to obey the speeding laws, to have a license on you at all times, those are all codes that you sign, and at the same time you waive your right to travel by automobile. Now, when the cops had originally stopped me, I told them I don't have a license, so therefore I entered into no agreement to obey your codes. And they didn't seem to understand that, but after talking to the dispatch, they were told to give me my keys back, tell me to walk down the road, and then leave in a hurry because they had committed to federal law felons. But when I got into court, the judge walked in, and everybody rose in court except for me. And, of course, I made sure I was sitting in the front row so that they could see that I did not give up my sovereignty, and when you stand in a court of law, you're entering into agreement where you're recognizing his authority. So he went through a lot of his cases, and he called my name, and I remained seated. And I says, Your Honor, I says, if I approach the bench, will I be entering into a contract with you? And he just smiled and put his face in his hands. And he says, well, you came up to the bench when I arranged your court date. And I just looked at him, and I says, no, I'm not approaching the bench. And then I pointed at the flag in the court, and I says, and it had yellow fringe around it. I says, Your Honor, that's an Admiralty flag. And the Admiralty flag is a naval flag, and its jurisdiction is 100 miles off our coast. I said, so is that the jurisdiction of your court? And refused to answer. So I said to him, I said, well, if that's the jurisdiction of the court, you have no jurisdiction over me. You have to prove jurisdiction. And at the same time, I requested to see his oath of office. If he had shown me his oath, he would have been under the Constitution and I would have been under common law. But he refused, and he didn't answer the question about the flag of the court either. And then he got frustrated, and he just says, okay, come back May 10th. And by the way, my court date, the original one, was April 19th. Of course, you know what that date is. It was the day we fought the balls of lead flew at Concord and Lexington. So it was apropos for the day. Well, when I came back for the second court, I had sent them in the meantime a bunch of judicial notices telling them that I was a flesh and blood man. I was not the I was corpus dominio diminutio. I'm not sure of the spelling, but basically I also told them that I was not under admiralty law and that I was under common law and that I didn't spell my name in all capital letters, which was the straw man we all take when we get a bank account or when we get a driver's license. All our information is in capital letters. Well, basically, the second time I went back, he held me to the very last person, to be the last person. And by the way, I sent him a bill for $25,000, $5,000 an hour for the first time, for the original time I went to court, telling him that because he demanded I'd be there and that I was under default for not being there. Basically, I charged him $5,000 an hour for my time for appearing in court. But what ended up happening was the second time he got rid of every other case he had, and the court was empty except for the DA himself, the clerk court, and who was a police officer, and also the public defender. He had already adjudicated all his cases, and he was free to go, but he stuck around to see what was going to happen. Well, basically, again, I remained seated when he first came into court, and I remained seated when he called my name up to the court to approach the bench. And he knew the reasoning why, because of the transcript of the first court case. So then he called my name, and I says, I'm not that person. I'm James Cook. And I told him how he spelled my name with no capital letters except for the first and last. Basically, he says, well, he says, what are we going to do with this case? So he called the district attorney in and said to the district attorney, how are we going to handle this case? Well, basically, she said, we're going to dismiss, Your Honor. And that day in court, they nailed three people for driving without their licenses and hit them up for $120 fines. And one guy driving without a registration for $150. Now, before I had gone to court that day, I sent all letters to the governor, the attorney general, the assistant attorney general, the district attorney, and the judge, telling them that if they didn't investigate the actions of the police officers for violation of my constitutional rights by searching my motor vehicle and by denying me the right to travel by automobile, by telling me to walk down the street, then I would hold all of them for fraud, for being imposters in office and taking their money illegally and without investigating the merit of my charges against them. Well, basically, I think there was a lot of phone calls going on behind the scenes where the governor was saying, I don't want to go to federal prison, and the district attorney saying, I don't want to go to federal prison. So their best thing to do was to release me. Now, I had two approaches when I was in court. The first approach was, okay, I've got all the case law that proves my case, the Supreme Court ruling saying that I'm driving or I'm traveling by automobile, not a motor vehicle, because I wasn't doing commerce on the highway. So I had my brief done, and I had a secondary brief which I had borrowed from to get most of the laws to show, or most of the court cases and previous court cases that proved my case. But I decided not to plead my case because that's a double-edged sword. You go in and it could go either way, and the judge can rule regardless. So instead, what I did was I chose to exercise my right under common law and challenge jurisdiction by remaining seated and telling the judge, that flag has no authority over me. You have no authority over me, because in the court case of Chisholm versus Georgia back in 1793, when the courts ruled that we were the kings and queens of this land, when you go into court, you are the king. You don't rise for your subjects or for your public servants when they walk into the court. And the bottom line is I established that they had no jurisdiction from the very beginning. And I had threatened most of the governors and the attorney general and the district attorney, all with federal prison under 18 U.S.C. 241 and 18 U.S.C. 242 if they proceeded against me. So I walked away with the dismissal. Hello?
I'm sorry, I muted myself. I hear you fine. Jim, you also shared some things last night, concerns that we are running out of time. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Well, recently, and even people where I work, we work at a secure facility that does a lot of government contracts. And we have under the understanding that an atomic weapon had left a base, and basically it left without paperwork. Nobody can trace where it went to. And this is a big no-no when it comes to nuclear weapons. And that shooting in Washington, we have word that they intended to detonate a nuclear device there. Because of that, in our conversation, you and I both came to the understanding that a lot of our line officers, generals, colonels, captains, lieutenants, about 150 of them walked out of the Pentagon saying, we're not going to obey an order to nuke one of our own cities. And basically, I said there was 150, and you came back with, well, now it's probably up around 200. So this private war and this war that's going on behind the scenes is getting very terse right now. If we're going to implement the Section 61 of the Magna Carta, we're limited in the time we have to do it. And I've always worked with I've worked with two generals, General Pardon, who did the who investigated the information of the Murray Building explosion, and I actually hosted the Prophecy Club, and he spoke for us. But the bottom line here is we are running out of time, so whatever we got to do, we have to put it on the fast track, and we have to put rocket engines behind it, and we've got to bring the petitions to take the people who did the actual 9/11 deal, give them 40 days to arrest those people and bring them to law, to court. That means the whole Bush regime. That means the Clintons for their part in violating our constitutional rights, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, the kingpins of the operations, and the theft of trillions of dollars by engineering the 2008 financial meltdown and the coming meltdown. So basically my concern is that we don't have time. If they don't, if they detonate that nuclear device somewhere in the United States, they're going to bring the 30,000 spinabs of troops that they brought into this country under DHS and put us under martial law. And I've been hearing from sources who have nothing to do with the Patriot Movement, who have been talking on the internet with Russian soldiers in Russia, who actually have mentioned that Russians are bragging about how we won't recognize America and it's supposed to go down in December. And their plans always change when we catch on to what they're going to do. But they set in motion things that are going to happen since January this year. In 2013, the significance of 2013, 13, is it's 100 years since they set up the Federal Reserve. 13 is an occultic number, and these people are also occultists. So if something doesn't happen this year, I'll be very surprised, and we are very blessed. But whatever is going to happen is going to happen soon. So we can't just keep on talking about this. I exercised my right under common law in the courts. It's time we exercised our right under Section 61 of the Magna Carta and bring these people to justice, or our republic is lost.
Well, Jim, we've got a few questions in from our listeners, one of which they were wondering when and where that court appearance occurred.
It happened on April of last year, April 19th. Well, actually, the event where I was talking to Doug on a conference call happened before April, but the first court date was on April 19th of last year in Elmira, New York. But it was actually a small town right on the outskirts of Elmira called Southport. And basically, that's where it transpired. And my sister, actually, she went up to my apartment to get some, you know, rest and relaxation, R&R. She just gone through a heavy stint at school, and the same thing happened to her. She didn't know her license had expired, or they had pulled it because she didn't pay a toll bridge, which are illegal because we own the road, so why should we be paying toll? So I wrote the paperwork for her, and she went into the same court. Well, actually, she didn't go to court because we sent the ticket back and told them that we do not want to enter into a contract with the court. And she didn't go to court. We sent the same paperwork. We sent it to the governor. We sent it to the attorney general. We sent it to the district attorney. So they just kind of like, oh, well, she sent the ticket back. Well, we're not doing anything about that. Well, she went back and she got her license renewed, and they haven't canceled her license because you know how the states, if you're in New York and you have a driver's license and it's revoked and you don't go to court, then they'll tell the Miami court or the Florida courts, well, she didn't pay this, she didn't come to court, so there's an outstanding warrant, yada, 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 and they'll revoke her license. But she went back to Florida, and she's got her Florida license, and they did not do that to her. And they didn't do it because of the paperwork that I prepared for her. And she hasn't heard anything about it since. So basically, this is common law. This is when you go into court, you've got to take control of the court and tell the judge that you're the highest member in that court because of our status as citizens, and that they're code does not apply to us if we have not entered into an agreement for that code. And at the time, she did not have a driver's license, so she had no license, and therefore she had no agreement to waive her right to travel by automobile.
Well, in your study of common law, and you've looked at, I presume you've looked at some of the documents that we sent to you regarding the boards of review. Did you get a chance to look at those over?
Yes, I did. And last night I looked at the on my own before I got your paperwork, or was it the night before? I don't know. But I think it was last
61.
Night where I read up on the Magna Carta, and most of the things I did in court was picking myself back under common law because our Constitution is built on the Magna Carta, and basically. What I had done was I went through and briefed up on it, and then I got yours, and I read some of the articles in there about the protections under the different rulings or the different sections under that. And I read the preamble and the other document you said. So you're in agreement
with the concept of the board to review, and that is – possibly the most powerful method that we can go about at this point holding our government officials accountable?
Absolutely. And there's only just one thing in there. I saw that you were doing it by county. I wouldn't do it by county because now you'd have to set one up for every county. I'd do it by state, where a board of review has precedence over all the state. You don't have to confine yourself. And like I told you, we don't have the time to go through each county and set up 25 barons under each county. It'd be more efficient just to say, okay, for the state of such and such, we're doing this. And if anybody else wants to set them up in any other states, what I would suggest is what we should do is contact the Tea Parties, show them the power in the Magna Carta, and also in the fact that we have this authority, and then issue to all the states at the same time a paper or a mandamus or whatever to tell the federal government that we want an investigation of 9/11 and we won't put up with any more hesitation. It's been 2 years. Now, I've been thinking about this for the longest time. If we make a move like this, the government would probably wag the dog, which means that they will detonate a nuclear weapon. They will cause something to happen so that they can declare martial law. They'll trigger the economic downfall. And because of the NDAA, they said they can declare martial law if there's a economic downturn of the proportions, let's say 50 population is unemployed. So if we come against them, we know that they will wag the dog, that they will do something, but we have to go through the fire to be cleansed. And if we have to go through the fire, we've got to do it. We've got to know what's coming, and we've got to be resolute in what we do.
Well, Jim, I'm going to let Steve and Gus ask any questions that they might have, or comments at this point, gentlemen.
I'd like to pick up on the last segment there regarding the boards of review in every county. I'm in absolute agreement with you that the time is short, and we need to do. And I've said this many times in our Monday night calls, we need to do the boards of review by the state rather than by the county exclusively. That is to say, form a board of review for every state, but don't hesitate to form boards of review for any individual county. There's been suggestions that we form boards of review down at the township level. I don't have a problem with that, but that's basically the same along the same lines. It's, you know, the time is very short, so it's a much easier thing to do to create individual state boards of review than to we're only talking about 50 at the most, and in regard to state board of review, whereas to do a county board of review, we're looking at over 3,000. So there's a huge amount of difference in the work and effort and the manpower needed to do the task at the county level. I also the universal orders that I'm writing are intended to be at the federation level, but they are universal, and so they apply all the way down to the township level, or I should say all the way up to the township level. That's the only thing that I have to say other than amen to what Jim just shared with us.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Gus has a question. That was Steve, correct?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Gus, do you have any questions?
No, I don't. I agree with both of you. And, you know, we get together on Monday nights. We talk about this. We've been developing these ideas for a few months. And it's glad, I'm glad to see that there's more and more people that are catching on and see that, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time left. And I appreciate you giving it some serious thought.
Well, I've been thinking about it since last week. Go ahead.
We have a question from one of our listeners for Stephen regarding, are you suggesting that you set up a state board and then invite the counties to have sub-boards?
No, it wouldn't be subordinate in any way, because if you look at the suggested charter sample that I published, the jurisdiction of the specific board that's being created is stated categorically in the body of the charter. So there's no subordination involved. The state board is not superior to the county boards because the jurisdiction is clearly stated. Every board of review, including at a township level, if anybody wanted to make one, has absolute authority to bring every federal and every state officer to task. We are, like Jim so eloquently illustrated, we are the kings and the queens of this land, of every sovereign state. We are the sovereigns. The state is not the sovereign. We are. That's why we have to do this. In my opinion, there's no way to obtain the control of the government within the political arena. We have to do it outside of the government structure itself, because we are above the government structure. We are the superiors to everyone that's in the government office, and the only way I believe that we can effectively deal with them is through a board of review type of structure. And with that as a segue, I want to go back to what Jim was saying with regard to the 150 or 200 line officers that have walked out of the Pentagon. Those are the people that we need to be serving orders to. They've recognized that there's an illegitimate commander-in-chief occupying the White House. They recognize that these are unconstitutional and unconscionable orders that have been given to them, and for them to walk out is tantamount to abandoning the battlefield. What they need to do is they need to turn around and go back and arrest the son of a bitch that put these orders out, and arrest everyone that is in violation of their oaths of office. And in order for them to do that, they need to receive proper orders. That's why I'm writing orders.
Well, what other tools are you suggesting that a board of review put to use? What other methods can they use to demonstrate and their teeth and show what their authority and power is when necessary?
Well, I can't think of anything more demonstrative of that than having those 150 line officers turn around and arrest that imposter in the White House. And I'm not sure that's the answer you were looking for.
Well, no, we've talked about writs of prohibito. We've talked about writs of quo warranto. We've talked about even setting courts if necessary. We've talked about developing a relationship with county sheriffs. We've talked about bringing a larger group together and having the board elected, for example, if there are, let's say you have 50 people show up at a meeting and you want to form a board of 25 to have that 50 actually elect that 25.
Right.
We've talked about a lot of things that are kind of mechanical, but I think this is kind of what people need to know at this point. If they're going to start a board of review in their county or their state, they kind of need to know the mechanics of it. And when I did my show promo, my email blast tonight, I sent out our documents, the sample quo warranto along with the essay and the orders to everyone on that list. So most of our, at least a good percentage of our listeners tonight, have the documents in their hand.
Good.
So we might want to look at that bottom part, which includes some of the mechanics that is necessary, and just maybe review that for a moment.
Yeah, the last page in a quarter of the essay, there's an outline for action that we had begun expanding each of those items on a couple of our Monday night calls, and that project kind of got sidetracked or sidelined. But yeah, there's a pretty good outline there to give people an idea of generally how to go about doing it. Now, my contact information is conspicuously displayed at the tail end of that essay, where I invite anybody to contact me by telephone, email, or Skype with any questions that they have. So my phone hasn't been ringing off the hook, so I don't know if people don't take me seriously or what, but yeah, that's if you read the essay and the sample charter at least three times, you probably won't start getting a whole lot of questions until you read it at least three times. But I'm very serious. I'm generally available at one of those locations, and I will be happy to entertain questions and serious dialogue from anybody that wants to move forward.
This is Doug Millar. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Doug.
Okay, I just like to mention one thing. For mass education, what I recommend that we do is we give people a little background on the original 13th Amendment and do it in a video form, and then Gus could do that, and then Stephen could do the Article 61 of the Magna Carta and bring it forward with the board's review and put this together and refer people to a website and put this on YouTube so it gets mass distribution fast, to and that way can invite some of those officers to contact each of you so that they can find somebody that they trust to talk to us, because we know that those names will never be released. We have to go fishing for them. How does that sound?
Well, I have no problem with that at all. In fact, when I started approaching the orders from the perspective that we're approaching right now on a federation level, the universal orders of the people, my intent has been from the beginning to publish these orders on a website and have them, as you say, on a YouTube video presentation, anything, everything give people an opportunity to read the orders and sign it, like these all these petitions that are being put on the internet for people to sign that have absolutely no significance other than making their opinions known. These are actually orders from the people that require a specific response from every officer of the executive branch of government at every level. So yes, I'm 100% behind that concept. That's the basically what I've had in mind since I started writing these universal orders.
Also, I might mention that this is Doug again. That it's rumored, and of course we don't know some of the names of those. Some of the people were killed at the Navy Yard there in Washington D.C. By what I believe is another mind-controlled Manchurian candidate. Seems like we're giving having people going into shopping centers and schools and places almost one to several times a week now nationwide. And so my understanding is that one of those people that was murdered that day was actually a naval officer from the Pentagon that was involved in this rebellion against the unconstitutional commander-in-chief.
Right. There, I've read similar articles that identified 12 of those people were actually involved at one level or another in making in procedures for arresting Obama. There was not just one or two; it was like a dozen of the people that were murdered that day were actually proactively involved in seeking the arrest and trial of Obama.
Well, I can sure believe that.
Well, some of that that's been written were whistleblowers that were some of those people who have walked out, some of the ex-military and people that have gone out either by choice or by force. And it's been more than one of them that have come out with that information. So it's pretty reliable.
Well, I think the line is what Jim was saying since he started talking to us. The time is short, and the time is now. And if we don't do it, who will?
Well, that's kind of the long and short of it, isn't it?
I believe it
well,
is.
Yeah, but that's something I've heard. Now, it happened in Pennsylvania. A person actually went to The Hague and said that their rights were being violated by their government. And the military actually said, we've been waiting for something like this because this gives us force of law by the true kings and queens of this country, the people. And our military is waiting for us to do something of this sort of thing. They're waiting to eradicate those people from office because of the treason that they're committing. And they'll stand with us because they've got family here, and they don't want to see this country turned into a totalitarian state. Here's the most powerful way I think we can act. This is just a suggestion. Basically, if we are looking at a conference up in Toronto about 9/11, how all these civil engineers got together and said that what happened to those buildings defied the laws of physics, people got on and told about how the terrorists, half of them were still alive when they were supposed to be dead, how the cell phone calls they supposedly made from the airplanes could never have happened because basically the cell towers couldn't be reached from the height they were flying at. Then on top of that, Owl Flight 93 actually didn't crash on the ground in Pennsylvania, but it was actually on tape and from the controller's point, landed at an airport in Ohio because they thought there was a bomb on board, and then the people were taken off and moved into a facility that was an abandoned NASA facility. So what we could do is they've gathered all the information. That is the exact information that we need for a grand jury. So this would be the perfect setup for that, and a request for the arrest of all the presidents since Bush Sr. For their complicity in the actions of 9/11, because they're all being under the orders of the bankers, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the Federal Reserve, who actually caused this to happen, and those people are depleting us of our Fourth Amendment, our property, which is money, by rigging these economic downturns. And they're getting ready to pop us with a real big one, and everybody knows it's coming. So what we have to do is move quickly to set up this board. Then the best way to do it, once there's a case in New Hampshire, and these people, this guy was arrested, and he had done nothing wrong. I forget the exact details of it. But basically, I wrote a letter to the provost marshal of the military, because his job under his oath is to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And they also have, if you request it, they can also step in and override state jurisdiction over anybody held as a political prisoner and protect the people that right. So it might behoove us, when we start this process, gather these people together who've already are the engineers and people who've gathered the information and shown the anomalies and shown how these criminals have been changing their story to fit the facts, and that we know just through their things, through their statements, that they're actually hanging themselves, giving them enough rope. So if we do this and we take the information they gathered, sit, get together, call them together, say this is what we're doing, this is what we have, this is how we're going to proceed, and we're going to use the provost marshals of the military in each state, because there's a provost marshal in every single state, and it's up to them to, they're under citizen law, not under the president of the United States. The president can only do so much. It has to be Congress who decides we go to war, but it has to be the people of the state demanding our military act in our stead. And our military is waiting for this. They're waiting for the people who've got the chutzpah to stand up, move forward, and say, not in our name. Let's do this. And they have to follow suit. They have to. If our government is complicit, if our commander-in-chief doesn't have a birth certificate, if our commander-in-chief is a communist, hey, our Constitution gives us the authority to have a constitutional republic, not a communist government, not by a bunch of liberals who've been changed things by fiat rather than by decree of our constitutional laws. No. We're fed up. We've had enough. This is no more. And we have this authority. We have this power. It's time to exercise it. And it's time to get to these provosts and tell them what we're doing all over the United States. And then we've got to immediately put the fear of God in these people. And you'll see a bailout of these people. They'll be running for the safest haven they can find. And
Jim,
our military knows it's time.
Jim?
Yes.
I'd like for both Gus and Stephen to kind of give us a little bit of insight, because they've been working with some of the groups in the past before All States Organic Initiative. There was a group known as the Union States Project that was putting the Hague on notice, for example, in some of the states. They also were working with people directly who were making those claims that you were talking about regarding the military, and I'd kind of like to hear from the personal experience that they've had with that and why they turned to the board's review. The other thing that, and then I'll come back in because I've got something to say regarding the board's review and how I believe they've got to be approached at this point in order to be effective. But Stephen, Gus, would you like to go first?
Yeah, sure. The groups that Terry's talking about, the last one we were involved with was the Union States Project, and that's a group of people mostly on the East Coast that were doing what you were talking about with the Pennsylvania document. That Pennsylvania document was something that was written up by Will and DeLand and Jim Wright and some other people in that Pennsylvania area. But they were Will and DeLand were part of the original package that was done before. There's been four sets of different groups. There's been the Union States Project, the Nation States Project. There was another one before that. But they're all doing the same thing. They're giving public notice to the Hague that the sovereigns of the land are living on the land. We are here, and we are not the persons, the 14th Amendment citizens. So I'm going to let Steve take it from there because it's just, you know, we all did the same thing, and we got to the point where, you know, we established that we are those people, and these groups were not willing to move forward from there, and Stephen decided, Stephen, go ahead, take it from there.
All right. Well, we uncovered a lot of duplicity and outright lies that were being perpetrated by those guys that started the Union States Project. And when I exposed their perfidy, they got mad. Anyway, we split up. But in the last few weeks or months of our involvement with the Union States Project, we were moving towards getting a quorum of the original 13 states so that we could call, so that we could convene the Committee of States and proceed according to the authority of that committee given in the Articles of Confederation. When it became apparent to me getting enough agreement among enough people to move forward in that format or that venue was going to be almost impossible. And I had kind of a serendipity one day, and I realized, well, we don't really need the Articles of Confederation per se. We don't need the Committee of the States per se. We are who we are. We are the sovereigns of this federation of states. Why don't we just go beyond the scope of everything that's ever been established as law and government in this land and express ourselves as the sovereigns that we are? And that's what led me into the study of Article 61 and the creation of what I termed boards of review. So that was the reason and the force that drove me into this position in expressing the sovereignty of the people in a manner that is extra-governmental and literally above the authority of anyone and everyone, including that monkey in the White House. We have the authority, and we need to exercise it. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And I just want to say this. There have been substantial petitions and all sorts of calls and notices served on the beast in Washington, D.C., and it's come to everyone's attention at this point that just like walking into a federal court jurisdiction is not, you're not going to be able to seek remedy there. You're not going to be able to seek remedy from the criminals, the criminally insane people that occupy that Washington D.C. district and are basically puppets of the banksters, the crown, etc. And in order for us to have a true effect, we've got to work within an area where we can actually somewhat be the big frog in the little pond. And that's one of the reasons why it's very important within each county. And I'm not suggesting that we should try to get every county right away, but I'm saying every county that we can lay our hands on out there to form a board of review, I think are going to have a greater effect on the county level than you will even on the state level. But if you get enough of the counties going, then they're going to have a tremendous impact on the state. And if you get enough states going, then at that point you might be able to have an effect on the federation-wide scene. But going to be ignored at that level right now. And we've got to build this as a grassroots organization, and it cannot be a top-down deal. It's got to be grassroots, just like the proper organization of a well-regulated militia.
Terry, before we go on, you know, one of the things Stephen mentioned is, you know, this epiphany or whatever you want to call it. You know, we realize that, you know, we are who we are, and a lot of people, you know, focus on how did we get here? You know, the Act of 1871 and the Reconstruction Acts and the Lieber Code and Washington did this, and, you know, some of these guys were Freemasons, and they have all this stuff, like they need to know what it is that caused the problem. We don't need to know what caused the problem. What we need to know is that as creations of Almighty God, we have the authority to fix it. And that's the bottom line. We don't need to know how we got here. We are here. We are together. And we need to stand together and move on from here with that authority as the sovereigns on the land. So, you know, just a caution to people not to get bogged down with all that stuff, because there's a lot of it to go around, and you don't need to know it all. You just need to know that you do have the authority to come together and assemble and to take control over the situation that you're in.
Amen. And with regard to what you were saying, Terry, I've always said that ultimately I want to see a board of review created by the people of every county and every state in the union. However, with the same amount of energy that it takes to create a board of review in a given county, those same people, even if they're all in the same county, that same set of people, given the same amount of energy, all they have to do is change a couple of words in the sample charter, and all of a sudden their county board of review is a state board of review. They're all inhabitants of the same state, so why waste your time with just another 20 cents worth of ink? You can create two separate charters, one for your county and one for your state.
Well, it would obviously be more powerful if you've got multiple counties represented. But
obviously,
I agree. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just suggesting that if you want, as some have said, recognition, which I know we're fighting people being too concerned about that. But if you do want that recognition, I believe it's going to be a lot more powerful if you can get a majority of your counties represented on that board of review, especially if they're elected from their county board of review.
I have no argument at all.
Well, Stephen, where would you like to see this conversation go tonight? We got about 55 minutes left here, and we've covered a lot of ground in the first hour, but I'm just wondering where you think it'd be most productive to take this.
Well, I think it would be wise and probably beneficial for everyone involved here to get some kind of feedback, questions, comments from your audience.
We had a hand up earlier, but I don't think they were in the right place. So we can't open the phone lines, and anybody that would like to call in and ask a question, our call-in number is 347-838-9176, and we'd love to hear your questions and respond. So please call in. Yeah, 919 is area code. You should have a live mic, 919. Please announce who you are.
I think it's for me, Joe.
Yep.
Hello, Joe.
How is everybody tonight?
We're doing good. Do you have a question for one of our panelists?
Well, Gus and Steve, one of the only questions that I may have is that, unfortunately, the process has slowed to a grinding halt. And we haven't seemed to overcome that. I was wondering if they've recently come together with other people to find out how we can make the process move ahead quicker.
Well, that's why we're on this call tonight, Joe, Terry, and everyone else. Joe is the secretary of the Committee for Recession, North Carolina, that we established about a year ago now to start off the process of moving our state back into a condition of being a functioning constitutional republic. I was elected as the chairman of that committee, and Joe is the secretary. And he was right. It's been very, very frustrating for me because everybody that participated in the creation of that committee for recession has basically flown the coop, gone elsewhere. I spoke with one of the signatories a couple of weeks ago, and he's pretty much of the same opinion that the others seem to be, is that, you know, we're not getting anywhere, and we're not accomplishing what we set out to accomplish. And of course, none of these guys have really been involved in what I'm doing with the boards of review, so that could be a part of the problem. But in North Carolina, at least, it's probably the same in other states. We've got a lot of groups of people that say they want the same thing, but they can't seem to tolerate each other, and they can't seem to come to any kind of a consensus as to what we can say and do that is in harmony with what the others are saying and doing. And so that rift goes all the way back to 1997, when I was in prison, or in federal lockup, I should say, in the county jail, that my friends back here in North Carolina were setting out to do exactly what we're talking about, restoring the Constitutional Republic. But they don't want to even talk to me, because I pointed out the errors of their ways, and they don't want to repent what they've done wrong. And so it seems to be that everyone wants to go in the same direction, but somehow the roads don't all go the same way. And I don't really know what the answer to that is. People like Joe probably would be best suited at providing those answers, but I'm going to put that onus back on you, Joe.
Well, the thing that we're working on here, and we're working, obviously it's an uphill climb for anything to bring people together, and we've witnessed this argumentative attitude, egos, and people wanting to operate within their own little cliques, or if it's not their idea, it's not a good idea, kind of thing. And what we're looking at here is trying to provide, especially, that's one of the reasons why it would be good to have an elected Board of Review, because then you would, hopefully, that election process might get some of the reactive, some of the people who are going to really disrupt the production of the team, get them out of the picture so that they cannot disrupt the Board of Review. And we've seen this. I've witnessed it here in my own county, in my own state, witnessed it at the Continental Congress back in 2009, witnessed it in the Third Continental Congress. We've seen it in every group that, you know, we've put together or been a part of or watched. And, you know, this process is a little bit different than that because you're taking 25 qualified electors from a specific jurisdiction that have a sole function of government oversight and looking for criminal activity in elected officials and finding out how they're breaking the law. And you can you should be operating right underneath something like a Robert's Rules or something like that, so that any one individual that wants to be disruptive or stop the process can be handled within those rules or by election or by the group. And I certainly think that the group could even dismiss panel members in that Board of Review. And we haven't really set those bylaws, but I would highly recommend that you have bylaws where the group could remove somebody by vote if they are not, in fact, conducting themselves as a team player. Because we've got to not try to create a new organization so much as work through the existing groups that are out there, like the county assemblies. You know, if you've got a good Tea Party group, I'm not suggesting that the Tea Party is any solution here, because so many of them are so disoriented and disassociated even from one group to the other, even in a local area. But you've got to find some like-minded people who are willing to work as a team and work within some bylaws and rules. So, you know, if you don't own a Robert's Rules handbook, you know, you probably need to go get one. So that you know what those rules of order are and operate that way, so that when you are meeting as your board, you're going to be very productive. And if you got reactive people, man, I suggest firing them. I mean, reactive meaning that they come in instead of being proactive and working as a team player to help the production of the team. They come in and they try to draw attention to themselves. And if there's not something to react to, they stir it up. If you got somebody like that, you need to get rid of them. So this is very important that you have these kind of controls in place, and that you also set some specific goals as a group, as a board. There may be things that a board may not be comfortable doing, but other things that they are. And the one thing that we're talking about here is we're talking about holding officials, those either elected or appointed or hired by government that are on the tax, you know, their tax beneficiaries, that they function within the law. We're not trying to reestablish some new form of government here. We're actually just demanding that people function within the law and that they stop doing whatever they're doing that's not within the law, and that they function properly and acknowledge that they are employees of the people and that the people are sovereign. That's in the first order that we sent out tonight with the promo that we've read several times now over the air. Stephen, would you like to comment further on that? Because this is something we've got to get to the people who are movers and shakers and going to act. You know, we can't be dealing with people who are going to wring their hands. They got to have some courage and some gumption. And, sometimes people just have to get to a point where they're hurting enough that they realize that they have no choice but to take action because they're hurting worse not to.
Well, I don't know what I can add to what you said. I mean, it's, to me, these things have been distilled down to the point where it's basically a no-brainer for me. I'm really not sure how to respond, Terry. Maybe you could give me a nudge in the right direction.
Well, no, the point is that there has been a lot of divisive things that have gone on with all of the various groups in this freedom movement.
Yeah,
we've had infiltration. We've had reactive people. We've had egos. We've had, what you would call white ants that have actually disrupted things. And it's gotten to the point where nobody trusts anybody. I mean, you know, you take a guy like Jim and you say, well, you know, he's a government contractor. Why should we trust him? You know, maybe he's just spilling out this story here just as controlled opposition. You get that. And at some point we've got to test everything by the spirit. This is one of the reasons why we have to keep the fact that this is a spiritual battle out there in front of us. You know, when somebody's willing to acknowledge that and acknowledge that our enemy are a bunch of Luciferians that want to be gods and they're setting themselves up as false gods, if they're not willing to acknowledge that, they may not really get the whole picture. So
well,
you know, these are the
that too. And truth be told, Gus knows a little bit about this. I, back several years ago, after I saw what I started that turned into the Restore America plan, I started thinking, you know, to heck with all this other stuff, let's concentrate on just the church and get just the people who understand that it's a spiritual conflict. And so I have entertained the idea of taking the universal orders of the people to another level and actually inserting the authority of the King of Yeshua, the King Yeshua, the Kingdom of Heaven, into the documentation and making the orders in the name of King Yeshua, the King of everything that is. But there's even fewer people on earth, especially in the United States of America, who can even conceive of such a thing. So I'm walking a tight line, a fine line between going strictly into a spiritual venue versus going into a more or less political or structured or unstructured governmental venue. You know, I don't really know the answer. Maybe that's why people aren't flocking to what we're doing is the fact that I'm not focusing on one or the other. But I really don't know.
Well, we need to get some folks that that know people to get moving on this, and so we need groups like United for Justice, for example. You guys have got some notable people out there that are a part of that, and this message needs to get out to them as well, and so that they can start forming these boards of review, whether it's in the state or county or wherever they've got the group of people that they can put together to do it. Doug, what do you think about that? How many you think you could get a person in each one of the 20 states that you've got represented to start forming a board of review?
If they were to participate next week in the discussion and understand and get on the same understanding that we're talking about. And so what I could do is I could go to the library tomorrow and send out the document that you gave me breakfast yesterday, Terry. But I think they're going to also need some one-on-one discussion with you and me or Gus and Stephen, or so that they get to speed, because yes, there are people who are willing to make waves. Some of them, of course, were involved in the de jure grand juries and felt betrayed by the division that occurred and the sabotage that was obviously very intentional from what I see. And I know one of our co-founders of United for Justice, has been in touch with almost every one of the de jure grand juries. And so I would like to, I thought I already made a note there an hour ago that I wanted to talk to you and introduce you to him. You probably know who he is in Canada, but if we get him on board, it'll help a lot. Get the word out. Not just
well, if the guy in Kansas is an attorney, I don't want to talk to him.
No way. No way.
We've got some contacts in Kansas that I've already touched base with and need to follow up with. But there's one guy out of Kansas who's an attorney that I really don't have time for. So
I don't know who you're talking about, but this man is a pastor from California, that San Francisco Bay Area, who moved out there with his family, realizing what's coming down to prepare for survival. You know.
Yeah, those could be perfect people, because they usually pull a community of people around them, and that's exactly what we need. And all of these common law or citizen grand juries out there, every one of them should be converting to a board of review and establishing a charter for a board of review and acting with the authority of a board of review, because it does not have the limitations of the grand jury. It does not just issue presentments. It actually issues orders, writs, and it has the ability to follow up with enforcement.
Sounds good. And, you know, we didn't have to stop with 20 states. We actually could have kept going. It's just I could not handle dealing with any more people. And so I just basically, after having over 80, I just decided that's it for now. We'll start weekly conference calls, and we did that for many months. But anyway, they're out there, and they're ready to make another move. They just need some leadership guidelines, and you gentlemen obviously have spent a lot more time on these issues than I have, and I'm anxious to introduce all of them. Maybe we can even have a conference call here on a Saturday, and have just the United for Justice people. We invite them to participate and to hear the three of you talk. And Jim, of course, is a co-founder of United for Justice, and if you'd like to do something like that, I'd be happy to set something like that up.
Well, we're available. I can tell you we've already done a few private calls like that to help some people in some counties who were already starting to organize. And that's the ideal situation, is to take the guys that are actually going to be boots on the ground, if you will, in each county or state, and speak to them, candidly, and bring the right people around them to encourage them and to direct them. And we are available to do that. So any calls you want to set up, just let get in touch with me. I'll hook up with Gus and Stephen, and we'll be glad to arrange a conference at just about any time, as long as we got enough notice.
You're right. I'd suggest we do it, say either 10 days from now, or I should say 9 days from now, or even 16 days from now. Give it everybody plenty of notice. Or I guess I should say 16 days from now would be best. And that, I'd like to introduce the three of you to each of them individually, just a one-on-one conference call before we do the big one on a Saturday. Should we discuss that further off the air, or do you want to go for it now?
I think we can arrange something right now if you want to.
Okay, so...
Yeah, put it in writing.
Right. So what I'm looking at here is the 23rd for what we invite over members all 80 of them to participate. We will, you know, that of course many of them are extremely busy and they won't be able to participate, but just keeping them posted beforehand by one-on-one calls, we'll get, obviously get a good sense of who would like to be involved. And so I would recommend that we set up for 8 a.m. Pacific time. That'd be 11 Eastern time. And we try and catch people before they make their plans for the rest of the day. And we do it before Thanksgiving. That gives us, you know, what, 5 days before Thanksgiving. Maybe have a...
Well, let's hook up sometime tomorrow, Doug, and I will make sure that you've got printed documents, because I guess you didn't see the email blast that went out tonight either, so it had the documents on that. I did send them to Jim, your cohort there, and I'll be glad to get you a printed set so that you'll have it available until your internet's back up in about a week.
Fantastic. Yep.
Be sure you recognize the format, Terry, because some of those documents are in legal size format.
Okay. If my computer tells it to print it on 8.5 by 11, it's going to print it on 8.5 by 11.
No, it won't.
It will. If I reformat it, it will.
You'll have to reformat it, and if you do that, you'll be violating the law of the contract.
Uh-oh.
Well, the order's printed
in
just fine.
Format. Sample charter is a charter. That's a legal document. That needs to be in the legal format. It needs to be printed in a legal format. It needs to stay that way. Same thing goes with the order.
Can you gentlemen hear me? This is Jim Cook.
Yeah.
Okay. My question was about how to set up a charter. When you were speaking of it, that piqued my interest. Now, who do you register that with? How do you register it? How do you set it up? Can you explain that? I suppose your audience would like to hear that.
With the Kingdom of Heaven, Jim.
I'm sorry. Repeat that.
Register it with the Kingdom of Heaven. Yeshua, the King of Kings.
That's right. No king but King Jesus.
Well,
we've actually talked about providing copies to any of the officials within the jurisdiction that board is working in. And what specifically needs to be published, Stephen?
Well, the charter itself, once it's written and agreed upon by everyone that's participating in its creation, you print it on good quality, you know, 100% cotton if possible, linen. A good quality legal document needs to be put on good quality paper. And signature is applied in blue ink. If you're going to use your thumbprints for seals, then, you know, I would recommend using a good red ink pad for that purpose, and, you know, make a few practice runs before you start sticking your fingerprints on there, because most people will put too much ink on their thumbs and smash down so hard that all you get is a big red blob. The whole point of having a seal is for it to be identifiable. So you want to put your seal in a form that can be ascertained. If you're afraid of NCIC, then, you know, you're going to have to buck up.
Okay.
I don't think they know what NCIC is, Stephen.
If you're in the system, you know what it means. If you're afraid of that fact, then, you know, maybe you need to go home.
Well, gentlemen, we've got some other things happening out there around us that I think it'd be worth for us to spend a few minutes on, one of which is this call for a con that's going on out there. It seems like the CFR has really been working through the bar and a lot of the attorneys and through some other organizations out there that are feeding people a lot of bull. And I think it's worth revisiting here tonight with this group. Who would like to go first in that regard?
Well, if by con you mean a constitutional convention rather than a continental conference, my response is that's the most dangerous thing imaginable. It's unnecessary and it's extremely dangerous. And the fact that it's probably, as you say, being coordinated by agents of the Crown, i.e. bar-affiliated attorneys, it makes it even more dangerous. It also underlines and exemplifies the reason that we need to get our boards of review established so that we can counteract those things.
For sure.
Well, there's three major reasons why a constitutional convention is one of the most dangerous things that we could do regarding our constitutional republic. First of all, there's only been one. Some of these guys are out there claiming that the Conference of States that was done back in, I think it was 1861, which failed because the conference didn't fail, but all they did was make recommendations to the Congress. They did not act in the capacity of a constitutional convention that carries as much authority or more authority than a joint session of Congress. That group in 1861 was representatives of the states, but they were brought together to try to figure out a way to avoid the Cotton War, the Civil War, and they made recommendations, and then the Congress refused to go along with them. So it was meaningless, ultimately. And a constitutional convention, there is no provision or law or statute to limit the scope of a constitutional convention. Once it is called, they are at liberty to take that wherever they want to go with it. And if you look at the one example we had where they were instructed to make minor changes to the Articles of Confederation, they ended up completely rewriting, and that's where our Constitution came from today, which means if you had one today, there's nothing to stop them from completely rewriting our Constitution. And the problem is, the second problem is how the delegates are selected for a constitutional convention. They're either selected by the governors or by the state legislature or by some nominating committee and approved by the governor or state legislature. And we know that the majority of the governors out there are, in fact, bankster puppets, and the banksters have their puppets in high level of every state legislator. And you can count on the fact that just like our presidential nominees, the nominees for delegates for a constitutional convention will be installed by those that control the media and the banks and the money supply that has put these people into office. The people will have nothing to do with the selection. There will be no vote, but the people will have nothing to do with the selection of the delegates that go to that convention, and there's no way to limit it to like a balanced budget, for example. There's also no provision or statute or law that provides for a state to issue a rescission, in other words, to rescind their call once they've issued it. There was a bunch of states that issued calls over the last two decades that have rescinded their call because they realized that they were lied to, they were misled, that you cannot control the scope of a constitutional convention. Once they realized that, they rescinded their call. But then those that are pushing for it point to the fact that there is no provision or rule for them to rescind once they've issued a call. So they are counting all of those votes. So the people that are out here, you know, laying claim that this is a way to go, they have to have ulterior motives. They have to be wanting to destroy the Constitution. They can see that the political environment today is treacherous for that on a federation-wide scale. And so they've got to know the risk. They've got to be deceiving people willfully and lying to them. How many times has the Constitution been amended without a constitutional convention? There's a provision for that in the Constitution. That's what makes it as perfect of a document as it is. And I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's the most perfect one we've got, and we've got to hold on to it because at least there we have a Bill of Rights. If it gets rewritten, that Bill of Rights is history. So I'd like to open the floor for each one of you guys to comment on that.
Well, you know, I completely agree with everything you're saying, Terry. And the Constitution, you know, is very clear about amendments. When two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution. So any changes that need to be done can be done with that very first provision of Article 5. We don't need to go any further. And if we're going to go any further, then let's propose an amendment to strike the option for a convention for a con, because it is dangerous, and there's adequate provision simply through the amendments to make those changes.
Stephen, any other comment? Are you still awake? Did we put you to sleep?
No, not to sleep. No, I have nothing else to add to that. I'm a little bit succinct, I guess, in what I originally said, but I think that was pretty thorough, compact, though it may have.
Any other comment about that?
Well, Terry, this is Doug Millar. He asked each of us to comment. I want to just reemphasize that back in 1967, Myron Fagan, that we talked about, I'm not sure which was my program or your program, but the bottom line is, unless people understand that the Council Formulations was identified by Myron Fagan in his long play records you can listen to on YouTube as audio only. He was 80 at the time in 67 when he put this out. It said that the Council of Relations is a luminized division that rules America today as an unelected government. And so I've been studying this evilarchy ever since they killed Kennedy. And so that helped me understand exactly what's going on. But because the media don't talk about it, and, of course, the disinformation that's out there says, well, that Illuminati limit was died out 200 years ago. I, as a person who's been working with mind control victims for the last 21 years full-time in all these different states, can assure you that I've met with people who were raised in the Illuminati by their parents and grandparents, and they do report that they do rule our nation, but they also are very involved in child human sacrifices. And I know that we probably shouldn't get into this kind of stuff as far as trying to educate people around the nation right now, but we need to know what we're up against, because it is a Luciferian organization, and there's no sense in getting into it, but I need to emphasize that there's a difference between Satanists and Luciferians. And I met with a man who was in his late 70s with a witness from Las Vegas. The two of us went and met with him in Hemet, California. And I, of course, thought that Satanists and Luciferians were the same and everything, and they, of course, do a lot of the same crimes. They need to be a big between us, and they need to understand this, that for every evil deed we do, we also do a good deed. We balance the scales, whereas, of course, if you read the, any comments by Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan in San Francisco, he says we break all 10 commandments. He doesn't say anything about balancing the scales, so Luciferians consider Satanists lower on the pecking order of who rules America. But we need to understand that this spiritual warfare, I'm not interested in working with anybody who doesn't understand that and agrees to this spiritual warfare, because if we don't have God and His Son on our side, because we're on their side, we're all wasting our time.
Amen.
Well, I agree with that. Amen. Indeed. Well, we've got about 19 minutes to go. I think we covered the con. Perhaps, you know, there's, well, I don't want to go there. we've got only 20 minutes. That could be a four-hour conversation. I wish we had some folks to call in and ask us some specific questions. We'd be glad to respond to those tonight. And, you know, we've got a lot of things to work on. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering, how do we get the word out? Because, you know, we've been working on this, got a small group. Steven's done most of the writing. And we've talked about this, promoted it, created different things, and you know, we're slowly getting some attention. But what are some of the ways that we can promote this further and open people's eyes up to what's going on? You know, I'm working here with the petitions process in New Hampshire, and like Stephen says, you know, this is part of the existing government structure. It's not at all. It doesn't have the authority to back it up that as far as the boards of review has and these orders that we're currently writing. But what I am doing is creating exposure to, I mean, there's a lot of people in New Hampshire who don't even realize that there's a state constitution. And I'm willing to bet that in all 50 states, it's pretty much the same thing. People don't realize that they have a state constitution. So, you know, through social media, you know, other than the typical suggestions, which is, you know, your social media outlets and meeting people in small groups that are associated with other affiliations, is there possibly some other methods of getting the word out and increasing the awareness of what we're doing?
Well, it takes a little time and a little money, obviously, Gus. We need to probably put out an offer to speak to groups wherever, I mean, rather than having people try to come to us, we need to go to the people and find out where groups are meeting and offer to do presentations for them.
Okay.
I'm certainly willing to do that within, within a day's drive of me. And if you guys were willing to go within a day's drive of you, then we pretty much got two-thirds of the country covered.
I'm game for that. I think that's a great idea. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, my phone number is 603-396-1092. If you're within 100 miles of New Hampshire, I'll be happy to work with you. I have a website, nhredress.info, and you can go there and see some of the stuff I'm doing. But, yeah, it'd be great to do something like that.
If I could interject here for a second, Gus,
I lived in Claremont at one time, and I also lived in Greensboro, North Carolina, so I'm kind of like neighbors. But basically, I'm in Alabama now. But what I wanted to put forth is, what about social media, such as Facebook, setting up a Facebook site for this, and then anyone that we get in other states to set up their own boards of review, this will be their site, and we can post the doings, what we're doing. And it's actually most powerful media to use right about now.
There might be a way to approach that. What we don't want is to create a data farm. We've got a secure server set up that we can actually utilize, that's got pretty high security on it, encrypted email, et cetera, and we should be able to use that format to create a forum where people can come to and connect and do things without participating in the data farm. On the other hand, we might be able to set something up where at least we can point people to the right place using the social media. But I certainly would not want to provide personal data in that environment to people. I interrupted somebody, or somebody stopped talking.
I was just saying that I'm using Facebook right now to get the awareness of the New Hampshire Constitution out there, and it's producing some decent results. But I'm using it more like a blog than I am anything else. It's just a page that I created, and a couple hundred people have signed up on it in the last couple of weeks. With the help of some good friends that are, you know, they see the benefit of teaching people in our state about their own constitution, so that they have a foundation to work from, and so you know. But I agree with what you're saying. You know, it's a data farm, and if you're okay with that, then I'm already on the list. Sorry, Stephen. Go ahead.
No, I just said they're going to get you anyway, so, you know, my philosophy is, what the heck?
That's right.
Whenever I'm doing a talk like this, a conference, or even the email or Skype conference, I know the NSA is listening in, and so I tell them, make sure you spell my name right and don't misquote me.
Which of those?
Yeah, we've got one of our listeners is chastising us for not having the ASOI.us site fully functional, and I agree with her. She's absolutely correct, but it does take a little bit of time, and I know I've been too busy for the last 2 weeks to put enough time in on it, and I need to get back on there and get that going, and fully acknowledge that. You know, she wanted to go in there and register, and said that the registration function on it wasn't letting her complete her registration on it. So we need to get that squared away. So I'll get a hold of Jason sometime tomorrow and get that handled.
Well, thank you. I'm not too busy. I'm just not qualified.
There's also a Monday night call by the All States Organic Initiative, which we should mention. Gus, why don't you give that number out to our listeners, that they are welcome to come on Monday nights, where there's a specific discussion and question and answer time for board to review.
All right. We get together on Monday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern time, and you can join us by dialing 218-548-3867 and entering the passcode 1776 pound, and that number again is 218-548-3867 and the passcode is 1776 pound, and that's on Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Maybe we should be a little more coercive. Let's not issue an invitation. Let's issue an order. And the beer.
All right, sir. I'll be there Monday with my show, okay, on crusaderadio.com.
Hallelujah.
Is that something you want?
That you heard in the other room.
Well, we also have a Skype chat room where we get together, and if you've read the documents and you know a couple of times and you've gotten familiar with it, the chat room, the Skype chat room, is specifically to discuss, you know, what we're doing currently, and you can get a hold of myself, on Skype at gus.breton, gus.breton, and send me a request to be in that Skype room, and I'll add you in there, and we stay focused on the subjects at hand that we're talking about. A lot of people have gotten booted from that because they go in there and post a bunch of other stuff. So all we ask is that you stay focused.
Well, we got about 8 minutes here left. What else would you like to talk about tonight? I could start throwing topics up, like false flags. Doug, you've studied the mind control situation. That's one of the things. How do you think that a border review could work to defeat some of the mind control that's going on out there?
Well, there's two kinds of mind control. One is more like brainwashing that we have a media doing to us every day. But when I talk about mind control, I'm talking about where the CIA authorizes people to go out and torture other people as children, split the personalities, and then have all the personalities that they program to go out and commit crimes and things like this. So it is so evil and so mind-boggling that I'm not sure that we should spend much time on that right now, because it's too deep and it overwhelms people and it scares them so much that a lot of people just kind of go back into their shell and pretend it's not really happening, whereas we know there's hundreds of thousands of people that are programmed to commit anarchy in our country whenever they receive a phone call and are triggered.
See, all roads lead back to the money for me, and I resist being too focused on it. But in my mind, if we can break the banking taxing vortex by reinstalling sound money as legal tender and force it into circulation within the states and as a competing system against the FRNs, the Federal Reserve Notes, we will have taken a huge leap toward all of these other issues, because what has happened is that they steal our production by the and also put invisible liens on each one of us and everything we buy and sell by the use of this foreign product that we carry around in our pocket that people have come to know as a dollar that is not a dollar. So if we can get back to the Coinage Act of 1792 and start conducting our business in gold and silver, which is the only constitutional money out there at this time, I'm not suggesting you can't trade anything you want on a private contract, but as far as established constitutional money, that's it. Then we'll start to break that banking and taxing vortex and put us in a position where they won't be able to use our dollars against us. These mind control programs that they've got out there, some of which are through the CIA, some of which are through Illuminati situations, which is proven at this point. A fellow by the name of Carnden Hammond pretty much proved that there were as many as 10,000 multiple personality disorder people around the world that have come out of or are involved in the Illuminati mind control programs, which, you know, Doug has introduced me even to a few people who personally went through that program and had been disassociated in their minds and have come out of it and have, you know, blown the whistle on it. And you've done some really good work in that regard, Doug. But if we don't get to a place where we can break the banking and taxing vortex and get each of the states to provide a wall of protection between the individual and the police state of the IRS and the Federal Reserve, et cetera, and the federal courts, if the states don't step into the position where they're protecting the individual right and securing our rights from that police state, then an individual who tries to break that banking taxing vortex is basically going to be incarcerated or murdered or in some way controlled, at the very least marginalized. So it's very difficult without having that that law in place at a state level. Would you agree with that, Doug?
Oh, yes, I agree 100%. You know, I've been studying the Federal Reserve and everything since they've been involved in killing President Kennedy, and so I have a pretty good handle on this stuff, and you know, so I agree 100%.
Jim, do you have any go ahead.
Our New Hampshire fellow man here, I've been doing researches on currency, and down in Massachusetts they now have a form of currency called the Berkshire, and a lot of the states are moving back to gold and silver as payment, and some states are even talking about refusing to accept Federal Reserve notes as currency. And it looks like states are doing their own individual processes. How far this is going to go is up to the state. And if this really starts happening across the states, and that means the Federal Reserve is going to lose their authority. Now, all we really have to do is shut down the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and the IRS will go away, because they are the ones who are IRS agents. There is no agency of the IRS. They are Puerto Rican Trust Number 62. So basically, the states are beginning to move in that direction. What we have to do is fuel that fire in our own states and make sure we tell people why, and our legislatures too.
Well, we've been given an extensive writ of prohibition and prohibito and mandamus regarding stopping federal instruments from being recorded because they are not denominated and redeemable in gold and silver. The Coinage Act of 1792 has never been repealed. So the law in each of the states also is that in order lawful payment of a debt has to be in gold and silver. So these documents that they're recording are really breaking the law. So we have this as a tool, and Ronald McDonald, who put this together, has offered graciously and generously to do whatever research is necessary in a particular state to modify that writ of prohibito and mandamus so that any board of review in any state can take that and record it in each of the county recorder's offices and with the Secretary of State and stop those federal instruments from being recorded. Now, that's significant. Gentlemen, we are out of time. I just want to say thank you to Stephen Hance and Gus Breton, Doug Millar, and Jim Cook, and our producer, Dr. Kate, for watching the switchboard tonight. We really appreciate you a lot. And I'm going to close this in prayer. Almighty Yahweh, Father, Creator, we just acknowledge that we need you more than anything in this world. We need you more than a board of review. And we pray that everything that we do and say and that we encourage people to do, that it will be in accordance with your will, and that they will turn to you and repent, because we recognize that that repentance is important. and that we will probably not get very far with a board review or anything else without your spirit going before us. We pray all of this in the name of your son, Yahshua HaMashiach. Amen.
Amen.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.
Picked up and dusted off their swords, vowed to set the captive free, and not let Satan have one more. What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate, took a stand upon God's promise, and stormed hell's rusty gate? What if his people prayed? And those who bear his name would only seek his face, yeah, and turn from their own ways. And what would happen if we prayed for those raised up to lead the way? Then maybe kids in school could pray, and unborn children see light of day. What is the life that we pursue came from a hunger for the truth? What if the family turned to Jesus, stopped asking Oprah what to do? What if his parents